Welcome, everybody, to the Don't Go In There podcast, a true crime podcast with a paranormal twist. I am Bill Reed, joined as always by your hostess with the mostest, Ashley Ernie. And this week, we are covering David Parker Ray, a.k.a. the Toy Box Killer.
I am so excited to get into this because I don't know a ton of detail about this. So I'm super excited for this episode. But guys, first things first, check out our social media. Twitter is at Don't Go In There 3. Instagram is don't_go_in_there. Facebook, we have a page and group. Like the page, share it, join the group. It's Don't Go In There. And then check out, we do have a website. It's don'tgointhere19.website.com. We're getting all our episodes on there. We're going to have other things. So go ahead and check that out. And then email us anything you want, your true crime story, paranormal stories, your thoughts about the cases, any cases you want us to cover at don'tgointhere19@gmail.com.
Don't forget to check us out on anchor.fm and subscribe to us to wherever you're listening to podcasts.
Yes, and don't forget to check out our Patreon. We have 3 levels if you want to support us in that way. Each level, you get a different reward, so check that out. And we understand right now it's a hard time for everybody, so if you can't, no worries. We definitely appreciate that 5-star review on iTunes.
Absolutely. So, Ash, if you don't have anything else, and that was the completed business side of things, what do you say? Let's go in there.
Let's go.
All right. So today I used our references were thoughtco.com. They have a profile of David Parker Ray. And then I also used dgomag.com. These 2 resources were very detailed, very good. I unfortunately did not have time to read any books or anything, so these gave me a lot of detail into what, you know, these crimes that he committed. There wasn't much out there, but there is a few episodes on like Oxygen about these 2. So if you want to go check them out, do that, because this is a very interesting case. But we're going to start where David was born. He was born in Baline, New Mexico in the year 1939 to Cecil and Nettie Ray. The family included his younger sister, Peggy, and they were pretty poor and lived with Nettie's parents on a small ranch. Cecil, the father, was very abusive as a father and a husband. And when David was 10, Cecil divorced Nettie and left the family. This forced Nettie to send David and Peggy to live with their grandparents' ranch in Mountaineer, New Mexico. Now, that was a kind of contradicting. I'm not sure if it meant like Nettie's grandparents or their other grandparents, because we just mentioned that they were living with Nettie's parents on a small ranch. So I'm not sure if maybe something got confused the way it was worded, but that's what both the websites said. So it's either they are living with a different set of grandparents or maybe Nettie's grandparents. And this point was a huge turn in David's life. His grandfather or great-grandfather, not sure, was a particular man. And if something was not done to his specific directions, David and Peggy were physically punished. And we got to remember, this is late 40s, 1950s, somewhere around there. And this grandfather or great-grandfather was probably born in the late 1800s, where things were done a little different. And especially on a farm or a ranch, you got to think, like, if it wasn't done exactly how they wanted to do, things could go drastically wrong. I'm not, you know, agreeing with the physical punishment side of it. We just got to remember that it was a different time and a lot of this happened.
But I think you see that with a lot of male figures in that time period. It was very like stern and strict, especially being out on the farm. I mean, they don't have the tractors and stuff we have today, but I'm sure it was like, if you didn't do something a certain way, you could get hurt. The cattle or whatever could hurt you, or you could ruin crops, which is their moneymaker. But it's interesting that they're living with their grandparents too. I think we see a lot of this with a lot of serial killers or murderers or things like that, where the parents can no longer, for whatever reason, take care of them or can't handle them, and they get shipped off to grandparents, and then things still go south anyways.
Yeah.
I think when we were talking about this case earlier, we mentioned, like, Ed Gein, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he lived with his grandparents and then ended up killing his grandparents. But it's just interesting that it's not just, like, isolated incidents. It happens pretty common. Well, I think it's common for that time, too.
Yeah. And then, well, what's even worse is when he went to school, it didn't get any better. He didn't get a break from the punishments. David was a tall, shy, awkward kid, which resulted in him being bullied by his classmates, which is another thing we see a lot of. Even at a young age, when he wasn't working on the farm or going to school, he was drinking and using drugs. So it was at this time he discovered his interest in sadomasochism. And you may be saying, you know what, Bill, I have no idea what sadomasochism is. Well, my young grasshopper, I will tell you, because I had to do research too. So basically, it's the sexual practice of sadism and masochism. And I know a lot of people out there are like, ooh, we've heard sadism a lot. And yeah, I was one of those where you hear it on TV shows, other podcasts. And everybody's like, for me at least, I was like, I just heard it so much that I thought I knew what it was. And I pretty much did. But it's the sexual gratification and inflicting harm to someone else. And then masochism is just the opposite. It's the sexual gratification of inflicting harm on oneself. And the perfect one that comes to mind is Albert Fish. Remember, he used to shove things in places on himself and have the kids like smack him with a paddle with the nails and stuff on it. He's probably the most well-known masochistic. I don't even know how you would say that, but
yeah, he definitely is. Cause that,
yeah.
Go listen to that case if you have not yet, cause that is the most messed up thing we've ever talked about.
Yeah. He was a fucked up dude.
So he's sadomasochism. So he likes the sexual gratification of harming other people and himself.
Well, that's what it said. That's what two of the resources said. But when we get into this, you'll see, like, we really never found any evidence of that. And if there is evidence of that, I missed it. That's a my bad. But I didn't see anything. They really concentrated on the torture of the victims. And that might be just because the victims are more important. We don't care what you do to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So
for sure.
There could have been evidence of it, but I wasn't able to find it. David ended up getting another job out of the farm in his young adulthood as a mechanic. Whether it was for private industry or when he joined the army. So he did it for a private garage, and he also did it when he joined the army, which is interesting because that's another thing that we see a lot of these guys going into the armed forces. And we've talked about this before, and you always said that, you know, maybe it's because they unknowingly need that structure, like unconsciously thinking they need that kind of structure, have somebody tell them what to do, because in their free time, all they want to do is something else.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because most of them, like, volunteer and go in on their own. There's not a ton of them that are forced to go into the army. And
we also got to realize that the 70s, we see a lot of this in the 70s, like a lot of the big time names were in the 70s, right? So the draft was over for a little while. But yeah, you're right. Even like the ones like Ed Gein, you're right though. We haven't really heard even like the older cases of people being drafted. It's usually the ones that are voluntarily going.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's like deep down they want that structure. They're looking for that leadership. Like a bunch of them don't have that. They have a strong male figure, but in a negative way. but they need like a strong male figure to point them in like a positive way of, you know, this is what the army does, this is why we do it, and kind of force that structure on them. Even though we find out later that they either still commit their crimes while they're in the forces or, you know, end up getting kicked out because they're caught doing stuff. But I think like deep down they want that discipline and that structure to hopefully maybe they're like, oh, I'll turn my life around, or that was just a phase. And then we find out it's, you know, something that they just can't give up.
They can't shake. Yeah. Well, according to his fiance, and then this is another, as good as these two sources were, there was some things that just didn't make sense. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say he did not have a fiance. He had this girlfriend, but according to one of the resources, it said that his fiance said that he told her that his first victim he had was a girl tied up to a tree, tortured, killed when he was just a teenager. There was also no evidence of this claim.
It's weird that he would say something like that. And I wonder if it was just like an intimidation tactic or if it actually happened.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the you know, our resources are wrong. There's just no evidence to back up his claim.
Yeah.
So, now I think what happened was he told his girlfriend or his accomplice, Cindy Hendy, this, because I don't remember reading anything else where he had a fiance, but I could be wrong. He could have had a fiance before he went into the army or while he was in the army. And the other thing is like, why would you tell that to your fiance? And I hope the fiance left like right after that.
I know, or at least like reported it or something. Like, I'm sorry, if someone comes up to me and is like, yeah, I killed someone, tied them up to a tree and they're gone. Like, my first thing is going to be like, okay, I'm running away from you. And I'm going to file a police report.
Yeah.
But that's why I think if it's not true, if, you know, if there's no evidence that it's not true, I wonder if it's like just maybe he's abusive and then maybe he was using that to intimidate her in some way. Like, hey, bitch, like, maybe. I've killed before. I can do it again.
Maybe. That's a good one.
Yeah. But, I mean, if she stayed with him, if that's the same, if it's Cindy Hendy, then, I mean, she's fucked up on her own, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a little bit about his background. Now we're going to get into why they called him the Toy Box Killer. Sorry, I keep hitting this thing on a desk. Next to David's mobile home sat another trailer. And I think it was more like a cargo trailer, one of those little box trailers. And what happened inside this trailer was only things that like were found in a Stephen King book. Like, it was fucked up. It's like your worst nightmare ever. He referred to this trailer as the Toy Box. So that's where that comes from. Inside the trailer was various types of torture devices, which included restraints, pulleys, whips, sexual devices. And in the middle of the trailer, I looked at a few photographs and they were a little blurry and I couldn't tell if it was like a small bed or one of those like doctor chairs that the gynecologists would use. But I don't really know because I've really never been to a gynecologist appointment for obvious reasons. I can only imagine they are not the most fun things to have.
They are the worst chairs ever.
But that's pretty much what was inside this trailer. So the walls were just covered. Like, think of a tall room. Like, you see sometimes these guys have like a massive wall of all these tools that they use, like hammers and saws, and they have them hanging by hooks just because it's easier to organize. But that's what this guy had. But it was not just filled with tools. It was filled with like whips and chains and sexual devices.
Like, this is a serious level of being fucked up. Like, you think how much time it takes to, like, get that in the trailer, organize it, hang it, acquire it? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know? But according to detectives, when they searched the trailer, that wasn't like the worst thing. They actually found videotapes of females and photographs of these females that he tortured. And then they found out that he was doing this with his girlfriend, later to be identified as Cindy Hendy. Now, I couldn't find anything really separate from Cindy, like about her past. The biggest thing I could find, we'll find out later, that she's actually released. That was like a big thing because it happened recently, within the year. So that was like a big thing I could find. And even in those articles, I couldn't really find anything about her past. I know there's some speculation out there that she was a prostitute at one point, and that's how she got with David. And then those two started a relationship. She probably got into it at first as like a, I don't want to die, so I'll just help this guy. But then I think she really got into it. And, you know, I'm not defending her at all because it's fucked up what she did, regardless of the reasons. But that's probably how it happened. That's how I would think it would happen.
I could see that instead of like her, like somehow she gets into the situation with him and she realizes it's either join him or be killed and tortured. And she probably, you know, join him, but then chose to stay. You know, there's a level of like, I'm doing this to survive, and then I'm doing this to please him and stay with him. And if she went on her own, regardless, say it wasn't just because she had that those two options, like, it's still really fucked up. Like, I can't, like, to me, I just cannot wrap my head around the fact that people in this world, one, want to murder and torture people in these sick ways, but then also find another person in this world who is like, yeah, that's a really great idea. I'm going to help you with that. And it's so mind-boggling to me because it's like, not only do you have this couple, I mean, you have like Ken and Barbie from Canada. They were a killer couple. There's a whole series on Oxygen that are killer couples. So it's not like...
Actually, and I think they are on that. They have an episode.
Oh, I need to watch it then. But it's like, it's not just like three people or four people in this world found each other. I mean, it's happening pretty often. Like, I just don't understand what runs through two people's minds. Like, but it's...
I think a lot of it for... Well, the guy, I don't want to say this because there's obviously female serial killers. They do it differently for different reasons. You never really hear of like a sadist female serial killer. So I think what happens is you get this guy that's a sadist, and you also, he finds a girl or a woman that just likes the excitement.
Yeah.
Like, she gets off on the adrenaline rush. She's doing it with someone she thinks she loves. She keeps him happy, and the two team up. That's portrayed in Criminal Minds a lot too, because this is how I think people think it happens. Like, you don't really hear about that sadist female serial killer.
Yeah.
That's not just how, I guess that's not how you know, you guys are made up, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not a psychologist.
I was going to say the ones that I know about, I'm sure there's probably some that are out there like that. But the majority of them are more like Black Widows. Like, we just poison and kill to get out of situations, like to get out of abusive relationships or to get a female out of the way, you know, because we're jealous or something stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to jump a little forward here to the March 22nd, 1999. This really is the time that sets up the Toy Box Killer to be caught. So on March 22nd, 1999, Cynthia Vajal, and they refer to her as Cynthia Vajal, but she also has another last name, and I can't for the life of me remember it. This is great podcasting right
now. Fantastic.
You know, that's just what I do. Cynthia Vajal Jaramillo. My Spanish is terrible, so I'm sorry if I butchered that, but I think that's Jaramillo. She was a 22-year-old from Elephant Butte in New Mexico. She was seen by somebody in the neighborhood of David Parker Ray, running around in public, naked, covered in blood, with a metal choke collar padlocked around her neck. A local witness, the guy that saw this, described Cynthia's running around in circles, covered in blood, and not making any noises or expressions. So she was just like running around in circles. And it was even said that this guy saw her. He thought she was getting chased at first, but then like she just kept running in circles. So I guess he thought, well, that's not too weird then. And just kind of went on his business.
I wonder if, and I mean, I don't know if we'll get into this, but if she knew her location, like if she was blindfolded when she was taken there, or like was allowed outside at any point, maybe that's why she was running in circles, because she didn't know which way to go, where the road was. No.
Yeah, we'll get into that. She had no idea where she was.
That, I mean, that could kind of make sense. I mean, at the same time, like, she's probably super disoriented, so.
Yeah. Well, and we'll find out that she's probably in shock, too. So, but the weird thing was, at the time, was kind of weird, but we'll find out why. But the police arrived very soon after this witness saw Cynthia. And when the police made contact with her, they heard a story that they would never forget and probably wouldn't have believed if she wasn't naked, covered in blood, with a metal choke collar around her. I mean, what they're about to hear is pretty fucked up. So according to Cynthia, she was offered $20 by a man for oral sex. The man drove her to his RV where another woman was waiting. The man and the woman tied Cynthia up, gagged her, placed a metal collar around her neck, and then drove Cynthia around for about an hour, I think I read. So just drove her around, probably to disorient her, so she wouldn't really know where she was. And then took her to the toy box where she would be tortured for 3 days. Upon her arrival, she remembered that they played an audio tape that described everything that was going to happen to her. And right now, I'm going to read a little bit of this tape. It's very long. And I'm just, to be honest, I'm just not a very good out loud reader. And I don't want to seem too dumb. I mean, I'm already seeming pretty dumb, but I don't want to get any further than that. So I'm just going to read a little bit of it. If you want to hear the whole thing, and to be honest, I just don't want to read the whole thing because it is fucking brutal. But if you want to hear the whole thing, they don't have the exact audio, but they have transcripts, and then they have a lot of YouTubers out there that did it their own, put some music behind it to make it even seem more creepier, because didn't know that was needed, but, and there's a bunch of transcripts online you guys can read, but here's just a little bit of it. Hello there, bitch. Are you comfortable right now? I doubt it. Wrist and ankles chained, gagged, probably blindfolded. You're disoriented and scared too, I would imagine. Perfectly normal under the circumstances. For a little while at least, you'll need to get your shit together and listen to this tape. It is very relevant to your situation. I'm going to tell you in detail why you've been kidnapped, what's going to happen to you, and how long you'll be here. I don't know the details of your capture because this tape is being created July 23rd, 1993. As a general advisory tape for future female captives. Now you are obviously here against your will, totally helpless, don't know where you're at, don't know what's going to happen to you. You're scared or very pissed off. I'm sure that you've already tried to get your wrists and ankles loose, and you know you can't. Now you're just waiting to see what's going to happen next. You're probably going to think you'll be raped, and you're fucking sure right about that. Our primary interest is in what... your primary interest is what you've got between your legs. You'll be raped thoroughly and repeatedly in every hole you got, because basically you've been snatched and brought here for us to train and use as a sex slave. Sound kind of far out? Well, I suppose it is to the uninitiated, but we do it all the time. It's going to take a lot of adjustment on your part, and you're not going to like it a fucking bit. But I don't give a big rat's ass about that. It's not like you're going to have a choice about the matter. You've been taken by force, and you're going to be kept and used by force. What this all amounts to is that you're going to be kept naked and chained up like an animal, to be used and abused anytime we want, in any way we want to. You might as well start getting used to it, because you're going to be kept here and used until such time... See, I told you, I can't really read. And used until such time as we get tired of fucking around with you. And we will, eventually. In a month or two, maybe three, it's no big deal.
That was fucked up.
Yeah. It's hard to get through. I mean, I've read that two or three times, and I still have a tough time getting through
it. I mean, so in the beginning, he's like, hello there, bitch. Like, he just jumps right into it, like, very authoritative, very, like, not emasculating, because obviously it's with a female. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. I can't think of it right now. But he's very just, like, you know, just trying to... What is the word? Like, the something. No.
Masculine? Like,
it starts with a D.
Oh, D.
Anyway. Yeah, derogatory? He's just trying to be very derogatory towards her to just kind of, like, break her down. But then it's weird, because, like, right after, he's like, you're disoriented and scared too, I would imagine. Perfectly normal under these circumstances. So it's like a tiny bit of empathy. Like, he gets it. Like, you're chained, you're gagged, you don't know where you are. It's perfectly normal to be scared. When it's like, it's so weird that he would throw that in there. Like, why are you trying to empathize with this person if the first thing you're doing is calling them a bitch?
Yeah, really. You're absolutely right about that. It's crazy. I think there's actually like two or three parts. So I don't know if they hear the whole message at the beginning, or if they hear, you know, part two at a different time. Could you imagine? That's like some sauce shit, you know, just waking up and he's not even there. It's just a pre-recorded audio tape. You have no idea what's fucking going on. And then you hear this. And it's like, oh, fuck. Like, how the fuck am I going to survive?
Well, and even, like, it doesn't seem like it would be real. Like, I think a lot of them would be, like, dealing with the fact, like, am I dreaming? Is this a terrible nightmare? Am I awake? Like, who? Because it's so unreal that it would be hard to, like, I don't know. It would be hard to, like, be like, oh, this is actually happening.
Yeah, it's true. I have no words for this.
And another thing that's weird, he said he created this on July 23rd, 1993, and then the surviving victim was caught in 1999. Do you know how many people could have possibly listened to this message between that time gap?
Yeah, and we're actually going to get into that a little bit. Because that's what's so weird about this case, is that it's so fucked up, but we just don't have that many victims to talk to find out how long he's been doing this. How many victims has he
had? He's had to have had a ton, like a ton. Because if it started in 1993, it ended in 1999, and not, like, this message has not been changed and he has not been caught in between. Like, I can only imagine.
You don't have all these devices and just have three victims over a 6-year period.
Fuck no.
About a third day, Cynthia was exposed to electric shock, cattle prodding, whips, and medical instruments and large dildos inserted into her vaginally and anally. That's a terrible thing.
I wonder why they would electric shock her. So I know, like, in his toy box, a lot of it was, you know, like, sexual toys and for gratification in that sense. But, like, what's the point of electric? It's just a form of.
Well, you got to remember, he's getting off on her pain.
Doesn't matter what it is.
So he probably just grabs whatever he can that thinks it would get him off. I'm trying to get through this. It's pretty hard. On the third day, Ray returned to work. Thinking Cynthia was too exhausted to attempt any type of escape, he left her unhandcuffed. However, she was still, I think, chained to either the wall or the bed. And I think what happens when they're not in the toy box, she's kept in his trailer so he can keep an eye on her. Because at this time, she noticed that Cindy, remember, it's going to get a little confusing with Cynthia and Cindy. Cindy is David Parker Ray's girlfriend that lives with him. She had actually placed a key to the chain that she was tied to on the coffee table while she was on the phone. So Cindy's walking around on the phone, just happened to put down the key on the coffee table near Cynthia. Well, Cynthia was able to move over to the table and grab the key. Unfortunately, Cindy caught her in the act of trying to undo the lock, and the two began to struggle. During the struggle, Cindy hit Cynthia over the head with a lamp, but Cynthia was actually able to gain control of the phone, and she was able to dial 911 and send it. But she wasn't able to speak with the dispatcher because she just got hit in the head with a lamp, and she's still fighting with Cindy for the key. Well, this dispatcher did her job just like most dispatchers do. Dispatchers are an awesome first responder. It takes a lot of stress to do this job, but this dispatcher must have been doing this for a while. She had a gut feeling, so she dispatched an officer to the house, because you got to remember, when you call 911, your phone number pops up, and we know where that phone number is registered to, or at least last registered to. So she dispatches an officer to the house that phone number is attached to. So just remember that. Now back to the struggle. Cindy was able to get control of the phone and hang it up. However, while she's doing this, Cynthia grabbed a nearby ice pick and struck Cindy in the head. She was able to get unlocked and escape from the trailer. And this is when she was seen by that officer, or not the officer, the witness, running around naked. And then luckily the officer arrived because he thought he was responding to a 911 hangup.
So, okay.
And that's what I'm going to go into a little rant here. And that's what people got to remember. A lot of things that happen. Oh, you were getting called to this. Why did you respond like that type of thing? He was going for a 911 hangup, which he's probably done a jillion times. But this one time he responds to a 911 hangup, and all of a sudden he has to go like, oh, another one of these, to the most fucked up call he's ever had in 0.2 seconds. Like, that's how fast you have to be on your toes to react to a situation.
So typically with a 911 hangup, the officer would just come to the door and just basically do like a welfare check. Like, hey, everything okay?
Yeah. Kind of just like, cause usually what it is a kid got a hold of the cell. Like now kid got a hold of the cell phone, accidentally called 911. And even on a phone that's not set up to be working on like a network, can still call 911. So you might be handing like an old phone off to the kid just to keep him occupied. That phone can still call 911.
I did not know that. That is good to know.
So that's usually what it is. With the cell phones now, we can ping it to an area. It's not very reliable. But if you're calling from a house phone, we know exactly where that's to. So we would respond. It happens a lot at offices too, because you got to dial the 911 to get out.
Oh, I've done that before.
You know, the
I felt terrible.
Yeah. And we always respond because you never know. You never know. It could be a situation like this where they can't talk, but they're going to keep calling 911 until somebody responds. And that's what I just wish people would realize that before they judge an officer of responding to what we get about a third. The dispatchers are getting about a third of the information that is actually needed. And that's not on them. It's just, usually when people call, they don't give us everything that's going on. Yeah,
they either, for whatever reason, they might not be able to. But that's why,
And to be honest, a lot of people that call, aren't very cooperative with the dispatchers, even though they're calling 911 for help.
Which makes zero sense to me.
It's weird. Yeah, it makes yeah. sense to
but
me
that's
too.
Why, but like this, I don't know, this, I like this dispatcher, because you hear in a couple of the cases, especially there's one case that we haven't covered, but it was, I think it's the Susan Powell, where she ends up, you know, missing. The husband now has visitation rights with the kids, but they're supposed to be supervised, and he takes them into the house, shuts the lady out, and then ends up killing them and setting the house on fire. Well, the visitation lady was trying to call 911, and they were, the dispatcher, like, made her repeat information multiple times, like, wasn't taking the situation seriously. Like, you could just tell on this call, it was very weird how the dispatcher was doing it. And I mean, there's some out there that are just there to get a paycheck, and then there's some that actually care about the job. And this, you could tell this person, like, really cares about the job and people. But I could never be a dispatcher. Like, just the shit they hear. Like, I don't know. Like, I hold them so high.
Because yeah,
I could never do it.
And unfortunately, they just got recognized recently in a couple states as now first responders, which I don't know how they're not. They're the ones taking the phone calls. Just because they're not on scene does not mean anything. Just because they are not in direct.
It's maybe more stress.
What's
they're
the
not
word
in mean? Like the yeah
direct danger. They still have they still have to deal with the PTSD of hearing these calls, hearing people getting killed, hearing people die on the phone waiting for an ambulance. It's tough. And then there's a point where you're trying to talk to somebody, they don't want to listen to you, and you can't do anything besides talk to them. So it's very hard. There is a ton of dispatchers out there that are just really good at their jobs. So I just wanted to give them a little thank you.
A little shout out to them.
So since the cop was able to corral her, find out where she was being held, they were able to make contact with Cindy and Ray. They were able to get the search warrants and everything that they needed and got into the trailer. And that's when they found all these sexual devices, and everything. And when they found the photographs and videotapes, they knew we have way more victims than just her. They got to dig in into Ray's past a little bit. And authorities were able to search Ray's property, and they found the photos and everything. Cindy, I screwed that all up. One of these videos led to another victim that survived the act, Kelly Garrett. They were able to make contact with Kelly in Colorado, and she told them that in 1996, she had gone to a bar in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Yes, that is a real city. I believe I heard another podcast. I think it was the last podcast on the left when they covered this. They said that it was like a show or a movie that came out in the 90s or 80s. And they were having some type of thing where if a town named it after the movie, they would do something for them. So they ended up naming this little town after this show or whatever. This is about 5 miles away from Elephant Butte. While she was out with a friend, pay attention to this name, Ash, Glenda Jean Ray, a.k.a. David Parker Ray's motherfucking daughter. She had drugged Kelly. Kelly was then tied up and put into the toy box. She was tortured just like Cynthia was, and then she was dumped after 3 days.
So how the fuck did he get his daughter to help with this?
No idea. And we'll find out why we don't find, when he's sentenced for all this, we'll find out why we don't find
that
much
is
about her.
So fucked up. Because she was supposed to be a friend. And also, what, like, why dump this girl and not kill her?
I don't know. And the thing is, this is 1996, so this is 3 years after that tape was made.
So why in the middle of, you know?
And remember, he said, we keep you for a month, two, maybe three. This is 3 days. So you can tell that he thought maybe he was going to keep these girls for months. But then, unfortunately kind of thing, but he gets bored with them in 3 days. So you have to think there's a ton of victims here. So after she's dumped, we hear it all the time. Her story just wasn't believed by most, including her own husband who divorced her, thinking she was out cheating on him for the past 3 days.
Which is insane because, I mean, so it's 1996.
96.
So it's not like it's back like in the 60s or 50s or whatever, where it's like, oh, girls shouldn't be out of the house and, you know, they can't be doing all this stuff, whatever. I don't know. But it's like if someone goes missing for 3 days and, you know, you're their husband, you should be more concerned on something's not right here, not, oh, she's cheating on me. Like, it just says he's a dick, so.
Yeah, well, I think, and the other thing, this doesn't, you know, give him a pass at all, but they got into a huge fight 3 days, or the 2 days prior to her kidnapping, maybe a day prior, which is the reason she went out to the bar with her friends to blow off some steam. So I guess he thought, well, while she was out blowing off some steam, she started hooking up with guys. So
that's just crazy. But for him to not believe her, like, I'm sure she came back all disheveled and like upset. And for him to be like, oh, it doesn't look like you were, you know, held and tortured for 3 days. It looks like you were cheating on me for 3 days. Fuck you. Bye. Like, he just seems like a real winner.
So I guess then that probably leads her why she didn't report it. You know, your own husband's not going to believe you, then nobody else. And she might have. I don't know. I wasn't able to find out if she talked to police, but I mean, apparently if she did, they didn't believe her either. So after this story came out, another victim came forward. Angelica Montano. She stated she was walking on Interstate 25 when she was picked up by an off-duty sheriff who offered her a ride. During this ride, Montana told the sheriff that she had been kidnapped, tortured, and then dumped by her kidnappers. She was told that as long as she didn't tell anybody about the kidnapping, that she would be spared and left alone. The sheriff offered Montana to take her to the police station to speak with detectives and file a police report. Well, she didn't feel safe in doing so and refused because she was told that, you know, she was also told her family would be killed. So she thought that she has already told this off-duty officer. She's already went against what her kidnappers told her not to do, and she didn't report.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I mean, you're held captive, tortured for 3 days, and then, I mean, you don't know where you are. You don't know who these people are. And they're telling you that they know your family, they know your, you know, parents, your kids, your husband, whoever. And maybe it's mostly likely probably a lie, but I mean, there's no way for her to know that. So she's doing what she thinks is right to keep her family safe and not saying anything.
Yeah.
But again, why dump her? And I mean, what if she didn't? What if she didn't fear that and said, you know what, if I tell someone and they believe me and we catch them, then he's caught and my family's safe. And she could have easily reported it. It's just so weird that there's this picking and choosing of people that he dumps and then people that he kills.
Well, I think of it, we don't really know, but I bet you the majority of his victims were high risk victims. So sex workers, people in that type of profession.
Yeah.
So they don't, A, they don't trust the police as it is. They're just worried about getting their next, they have to go, you know, take care of their family, get their fix. Most likely they're a victim of sex trafficking. So they're trying to get back because the asshole who got them hooked and working like this is probably looking for them and probably going to hurt them because they've been gone for 3 days or a month or whatever. So they're just worried about getting back and getting back to what they know. And the distrust in the police probably doesn't help either, you know? So after all this, Ray was tried for each of the crimes against the three identified victims. During the first trial, however, it ended up in a mistrial, and that was Cynthia's first trial. Luckily, it was just a mistrial, and he was retried and then convicted of all 12 charges in that case. Sadly, Angelica passed away before her trial began. And then during the trial of Kelly, Ray cut a deal with the prosecution to keep his daughter out of trouble. And that's probably why we don't know much about her involvement.
I hate that that's even an option.
Yeah. He signed the deal giving him 223 years in prison, and then his daughter would serve 2.5 years in prison and then another 5 years of probation.
Like, if it was not for her, then that one girl would not even be in the situation.
That situation.
So she's like exactly. The linchpin, like the keystone to, you know, that girl's kidnapping. So why does she only get 2.5 years? Like, it's so ridiculous to me that he could cut this kind of deal.
Yeah. Well, and the whole thing, like, justice wasn't even really served because 2 years into his prison sentence, he suffered a heart attack and died. So he got an easy way out. His girlfriend Cindy was sentenced to 36 years in part for her kidnapping and torturing the women, but only served about half of that and was released in July of 2019.
Like less than a year ago.
Yeah. So she was just released. She got lucky because they said a couple months or a month after she was sentenced, they signed into law that you have to serve at least 85% of your sentencing before you can be released for, you know, good behavior or whatever.
I mean, I would have loved to see Ray get some prison justice and die at the hands of somebody else. I was like, instead of a heart attack. I mean, that sounds so terrible, but like, the shit he did to other people, like for him just to get a heart attack seems like an easy escape. But
yeah,
for her, and I have this issue with a lot of early releases, and I understand good behavior, but it's easy to have good behavior when you're in a structured environment where they tell you this is when you eat, this is when you sleep, this is when you go outside, and there's people constantly watching you. And it's like, okay, just because they're in here and they're not causing trouble, because they know if they cause trouble, they're going to be locked away in solitary confinement. They're going to get their ass kicked by another inmate, whatever. Does it mean that they're going to be okay when you let them go into society and now they don't have this structure anymore? Plus, she was on the videotapes doing the same exact thing that he was. So why does she get off, you know, easier than him? Like, oh, it just enrages me so much.
Something must have happened during the interviews. Ray may have taken full blame. I don't know. But yeah, she got 36 years and only served about half of it. Yeah, crazy. Like 19 years. Yeah. So the other thing is now they were able to identify another accomplice during the trials. His name was Dennis Yancey. He was questioned about the possible murder of Marie Parker, his ex-girlfriend. It was learned that Ray had kidnapped and tortured Parker and then ordered Yancey to kill her after he was done with her. Although Parker's body was never found, Yancey was convicted of second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and was sentenced to 15 years. So he admitted to all this. They found him. He admitted to all this, and that's why they were able to charge him and convict him of the murder without finding the body or any other evidence that a murder has
like that evidence taken must place. Have been like very strong, because I mean, you can't just, and this sounds bad, but you just can't take someone at their word saying they killed somebody, because a lot of people will falsely confess the crimes for whatever reason.
Well, probably what happened was they were able to not just take his word for it, but they probably used Parker's admission as well. Ray's admission as well.
I wouldn't put
those two stories together. Because there was no other evidence. I
wouldn't be surprised if there was maybe a videotape or pictures or something. Because Ray kept a bunch of souvenirs. And I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, because they actually found an ID of some girl in there. Then they found, they actually found a fake ID as well. And then a few pictures of the girls, with some identifying things attached to it. So the surprising part of all of this is the FBI is still actually working this case, because of all the evidence showing that there is a lot more women that were kept against their will and either murdered or just let go and just never came forward. They have a dedicated page on their website showing the jewelry, clothing articles, and identification found in the trailer. They have 401 pages of pictures, hoping that somebody somewhere can identify these pieces of jewelry or clothing, or maybe some, they don't have any pictures of that they're not going to release the pictures that he took, but pictures of driver's licenses and fake IDs and things like that. And hopefully someone can come forward and identify these things so they can either reach out to the victims or try to find them.
I love that the FBI is still working on this and still trying to identify the victims. And hopefully, even just us doing this and posting it on our social media, people might become more aware of it. I mean, they might be aware of it in the area, but I was not aware that the FBI had this page of 401 pages. That's insane.
Yeah, because you're not from the area, but you know a loved one went to New Mexico during this time period.
Yeah.
They've gone missing. Maybe take a look at this and see if you can identify anything. So we'll have that posted on our social media pages in the show notes as well, because that is a lengthy URL. So we'll have that posted up. Make sure you take a look. Maybe we can help solve some of these missing person cases. Another positive thing that came out of this was from our escape victim, Cynthia. She started a nonprofit called Street Safe New Mexico, a volunteer-run nonprofit that provides support to women living on the streets who struggle with homelessness and homelessness, addiction, and or have been victims of human trafficking. Ash, I don't know if you know this, but I've been looking into this stuff before everybody was quarantined and we were allowed to do some stuff. I've been looking into this human trafficking thing. A lot of people think of the movie Taken, and that is a small part of what's going on. Most of our human trafficking is local pieces of shit getting young girls addicted to heroin and other drugs, forcing them into the sex trade and not letting them leave. So we call these girls prostitutes. We're starting to get away from that because, of course, there is some women that go out and do this on their own to make their money. But a large majority of them are victims who are forced into this and have no other choice. So I think this is a great nonprofit here. I obviously have no connection with them. They're from New Mexico. I have no affiliation with this, but I did want to bring it forward. But what's different about this nonprofit is they don't work from an office. They actually go out on the streets and make contact with these women and girls to help them get resources. Because if they don't want out of it, they at least give them resources for getting to the clinic to get checked, helping with food for their family. They also go around and send out what they call a bad guy list, which is on their website, which we will also put on our social media and the show notes. And they actually hand this list out to the working females with descriptions of the bad guy who are victimizing women. So when I went on there, they didn't have names, but they had a lot of descriptions of what the guy drives, what the guy wears, what he looks like, what type of crimes he's committing against these girls. Just not like your regular John, but like a serial rapist was one of them. A guy that abuses the women, just to make sure that they're safe and they know, you know, if you see this car with this guy driving, maybe don't make contact with
them. That is like one of the smartest things I've ever heard. Like, I love this nonprofit. Because you're right. Like, so the girls or women who get into it, it's not always by choice. It is a lot of times by force, by drugs, by poverty, for whatever reason. And sometimes they choose to stay. Sometimes they don't have another option to get out of it. And it's nice that there's like this nonprofit who is willing to help, willing to not judge, and give them, you know, options if they want to get out, if, you know, they need help doing whatever, if they need food, if they need checks. But also, you know, if you're going to stay and do this line of work, here's a, you know, a bad guy list that, you know, we're concerned about your safety. And I love that they're like just looking out for these women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So if any of you are from the New Mexico area, and want, even if you're not and you like the idea of this nonprofit, pay their website a visit, streetsafenewmexico.org. Show them your support. Maybe just letting the word out about them, that'd be pretty cool. And hopefully they're still doing their thing. Yeah, and helping these women. They're awesome. Out. So that was a little shout out to the FBI and Cynthia, ending on a kind of a good note. At least something positive came out of this case, where there's so much negative. And that's the story so far about the Toy Box Killer. We'll try to keep updated. Hopefully they're able to find some of these victims. I almost forgot. The reason Cynthia kind of started this was, A, she was a victim. But they found 11 bodies of sex workers in the New Mexico desert. And they thought it was going to be tied to this Toy Box Killer. It ended up being a completely different case. So, yeah, that's when Cynthia really got started, seeing that she just wasn't one victim. There's so many victims of this, this trade that these women are in. There's so many dangers out there. So, yeah. So, as you can see, in the same area as the Toy Box Killer was another serial killer. They didn't say what the case was, so I don't know if it's still being worked on or what.
Well, unfortunately, that line of work, that's a target. And we see it a lot with a lot of the past serial killer cases. So I'm glad there's Cynthia and this organization who are looking out for them.
Yeah. So, yep, that's the unfortunate case of the Toy Box Killer.
Well, I'm glad we ended on two very light notes that kind of uplift the story, because that story is terrible. But at least good things do come out of it. So, guys, let us know what you think about the Toy Box Killer. Check out that FBI page and go check out that nonprofit that Cynthia started, Street Safe New Mexico. And let us know what you think on our social media. Mm-hmm. Twitter is @don'tgointhere3. Instagram is @don't_go_in_there. We have a Facebook page and group. We would love to start a conversation about this. So go check it out @don'tgointhere on Facebook. Our website We're still getting that up and running. We're still loading stuff on. So go check it out at don'tgointhere19.website.com. And then our Gmail is don'tgointhere19@gmail.com. Let us know your true crime stories, your paranormal stories, cases you want us to cover, your thoughts on cases we covered, anything you want, just send it to our email there.
Yep. And don't forget to check us out on anchor.fm. Subscribe to us on your podcast listening platform. If you could leave us a review or just a rating, just to help us get our podcast out to the rest of the world.
We know these times right now are financially hard for some people, but we do have a Patreon if anyone would be interested in supporting our podcast that way. We have 3 levels. Each level you get a different reward. So we'd love for you to check it out. If you can't do that or don't want to, we totally understand. We just appreciate those 5-star reviews on iTunes. So.
Yeah, well, that's it for this week.
That is it.
Ash, anything else? Okay, well.
That's not it.
Oh, actually, since everybody's listening to this, this was supposed to be released last week, but we had some audio problems, and it was so bad that I didn't want to release it. So you'll be hearing us again in a few minutes because we're releasing another episode. So stay tuned. Thank you. Sorry for the inconvenience. I know a lot of people wanted some content because everybody's cooped up in the house, but I just don't want to release content, especially when it's super bad and I don't even want to hear it. So thank you for being patient. Thank you for sticking around. And then we'll have another episode for you.
Yep. Two.
This week.
Guys are lucky.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, just remember, until next time, don't go in there.